So welcome to another episode of Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to demystify the whole process of death and dying and shine some light onto it so that we're not perhaps as fearful of talking about it as we often are. And talking about being fearful, this episode might need a bit of a warning attached to it. It might not appeal to everybody. I've come to Mortlake Crematorium to have a good look round to find out what actually happens behind the scenes at a crematorium. I'm a little bit anxious about it myself, but I've got a very good guide in Natasha Bradshaw, who's the superintendent and registrar here. She's going to show me around, and we are going to go behind the scenes and see what actually happens at a cremation. So this isn't perhaps for the faint-hearted, but on the other hand, the whole point of this podcast is to open up the subject and demystify it. So Natasha, thank you very much for being with me and showing me around. We're going to start here. We are in the chapel at the moment. Tell me about the origins of this building.
Oh, so the building was built in 1936 and opened in 1939. It's a Grade II listed Art Deco building, and there's four boroughs that are in its involvement. So there's the London Borough of Hammersmith and Fulham, London Borough of Richmond, London Borough of Ealing, and London Borough of Hounslow. And we have lots of services every week.
And this is a lovely tall room with a great arched ceiling and a balcony at the back. It's beautifully decorated, isn't it? I have to say, I like it a lot better than many crematorium I've been into. Very often they are depressing, dark, gloomy places, aren't they?
They are. So no, we're very careful of how we look after the building. We've got the fresh flowers that we have. The two at the back there are silk arrangements, but we really don't like plastic flowers in chapels, and people are welcome to do as they want to do in the chapel. So if they wanted to have their own flowers, or they want candles in lanterns, or they want to have flowers on the pews, they can do that. So this space is theirs when they're here. We've had lots of different service types like that. So people might have brought balloons in, for example, which can be troublesome if the balloon gets let go and then goes onto the top of the ceiling and we can't get it down.
A long way up.
That's a long way up. But yeah, this space can be theirs. We've had people bring in their own artwork. So we've had easels all around with all their artwork on. You can see that there's two screens. So often people will have the portrait of the person on the screen throughout the service. And then they may play a musical tribute with a slideshow of personal photos on the screen. So that can be very individual for them, very emotive, when there's music and photographs. So different things that we can have. We've had glitter balls in here for somebody that loved disco dancing. Yeah, lots of different things.
So when we spoke before we started, and I said to you, I always find crematoria gloomy, you said, oh dear, I hope you're not going to go away with that impression from here. And I'm not so far, because it is light and airy, isn't it? And it's a beautiful building, as you say, and you're surrounded by beautiful gardens as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is beautiful. We're very lucky. I think a building will make an awful lot of difference to people's experience. What I would say is for people to go and look. You don't have to use your local crematorium.
You don't think about that, do you?
No. People will think you have. You can only go to one crematorium or your nearest one. You don't have to at all. So, you know, go and have a look round. We take part in Open House London, for example, so people can come round and have a look. But we've got an open door policy, so people, or like you have, you can come and look at any time. You can ask to see the crematory, have a look round the chapel, ask any questions you want to. Yeah. And we do lots of events here as well. So people, we work with a local school, so they might take part in our Christmas services, for example, singing, or they might play the trumpet. Every child in the local school planted a daffodil. So all by the river, we're just by the River Thames, where the boat race finishes, all the children planted a daffodil bulb. And they all come through to see their daffodils years later. So, you know, we do things like that. A lot of the children will use it as a shortcut on the way to school. They'll cycle past, or scooters more now, on by the doves to say good morning to the doves. We have four resident white doves. So they like to see those on the way to school. So anyone in this community will see this as a community place. Well, that's my hope anyway.
I know she's there. When I arrived, there were people walking the children, the buggies through and going to the river, I suppose.
Yeah, so they use it coming from barns. Rather than go by the river, they choose to come through the crematorium. and a lot of people walk in the morning with their dogs round on leads. They'll walk round. One gentleman helps and picks up any litter as he goes past. And yeah, no, they're a good bunch.
So we're here in the crematorium, and we're looking at the... It almost looks like a double bed, the sort of platform where the coffin goes. As you say, it's got marble around it, and then it's like a four-poster in a way, isn't it, with curtains. So can you just describe what happens?
Yeah, so that's called a catafalque. When it was originally put there in 1939, the pillars weren't there. And what used to happen is at the end of the service, well, it still happens at the end of the service, the doors would open and the coffin would go through into what's called the committal room. Now, a lot of people found that very harsh, traumatic. So in the 80s, the pillars were put on and people have the option to have the curtains closed.
Oh, right.
You don't have to have the curtains closed at all. So a lot of people will leave the curtains open now, and at the end of the service, they'll mark that by going up and placing something on the coffin. It might be a flower, or they may go up and touch it. So usually, you know, near the end, there'll be the committal part of the service, and the words of committal, if it was a Church of England service, for example, the words of committal will be read, or if it was a secular service, a poem, or some words of committal would be said, and then the curtains would close round. And often music's played at that point as well. But that's, again, a very emotional part of the service. So we'd always say, don't do that as the very last thing, because you almost need to catch your breath and get your composure, then last few words, and then leave.
I think that's one of the things that makes crematoria a bit daunting, is the fact that you see the coffin, and then you've described how it happens here. Sometimes it goes along on rollers, doesn't it, and disappears. Sometimes I've seen them go down. But we're left not knowing what happens next.
Yeah.
And that's really why I'm here, so you can show
And
me.
Even on, so a lot of people will put the coffin on the catafalque, but it doesn't have to be on the catafalque. So we have trestles. People have had the coffin on trestles. We've had a gentleman that loved his beer, so he came and had... the kegs of beer, and his coffin was placed on the kegs of beer. We've had shrouds, so people have been in a shroud rather than a coffin, and they've placed the shroud on the floor and sat around here. Yeah. So there's so many different things that can be done. You can have an open coffin, so many people will have an open coffin in here. And sometimes we've had funerals of very small babies. They just sit in the pew and hold baby.
Oh, okay.
So they do that. So it doesn't have to be, but that can only happen if you have the questions either with us or the funeral directors, and people have those conversations. So if there's been things that you've seen in other places that you didn't like, that's almost where to start the conversation. Say, I didn't like this because I don't want that. Mm. And then work out what will work.
I suppose one of the problems is that you organise a funeral in a bit of a hurry, don't you, really? Because you're often not expecting someone to die, and then suddenly you're faced with it, and you don't know. You don't know what's on offer, really, and you don't think to look around at different places like you've suggested we can do.
Mm.
But this is, again, partly what we're here for, is to get people talking about it early enough.
Yeah, and really have a look around. I think people say that people don't like to talk about death, but I think they do. It's just sometimes they don't have the conversations with their family or different generations, because one might think they're going to have some effect that it will happen, and others don't want to say it because it may upset someone. But I think if you can have those conversations and really start with what I don't want, it can help. And then to find, either do the funeral yourself and not use a funeral director, because you don't have to use a funeral director, or use a funeral director that really listens to you and helps through that.
So shop around for a funeral director as well as shopping around for a crematorium.
Yeah, or just know, just think, you know, that was the funeral I went to. What did work well? And you think, that was good.
So I think we better bite the bullet, and you better start showing me around behind the scenes so we do find out what actually happens, please.
So the coffin, as we said, would have been placed on the catafalque. And at the end of the service, when everyone's gone, if the curtains haven't already been closed, we will close the curtains. Usually people will have some music playing, but you may hear the curtains close as we talk. It takes about 42 seconds, not too long.
Yeah, it is like a closure, isn't it?
Mm.
When you see the curtains closing.
And then, you know, just if they've had that time and that's happened, and then something else is said or another piece of music as you go, it can, as I say, catch your breath again, really.
Yes, catching your breath's important, isn't it? Before you have to go out and face everybody else.
Yeah. And then everybody would leave the chapel, and when everyone's left, we would then take the person's coffin to be looked after. So we're just going through a door, and we're just going to open another door, which takes us into the committal room.
Well, this is a more modern, modern-looking room with a lower ceiling.
So what would happen here? So the doors that are on the other side can be opened from this side. And this is the original 1939 handle, which you can see there's a little catch on a chain at the end there.
Yeah.
So that's against the coffin.
Right.
And what I would do is move the handle, and that will push the coffin along.
I see, that brings it here.
Yeah,
brings it
and that will this. Bring the coffin. And this is called a charging bier. So it's a table with rollers, really, and the coffin would be placed on there.
So this would happen after everybody's left the chapel.
Yeah.
And your team then come and start looking after the coffin here.
Exactly. So often people will think that the cremation takes place straight away as the coffin comes through the door, but it doesn't. It has to move into another room. So we're in the committal room now. Committal room now needs to move into the crematory. So we would then take the coffin, and the first thing that we will do is check the name on the coffin matches what we call the cremation ID card. And to be able to produce a cremation ID card, we would have had to check lots of paperwork. Yeah. So we would have had an application for cremation from the applicant, so usually the next of kin. We would have had the green certificate from the registrars when somebody's gone to register the death. And we will have a coroner's form 6. And then a medical referee, who's a doctor of 5 years standing, has to sign the cremation form to allow the cremation to happen. So all that happens before in our offices. So we will then check the name of the coffin, the name of the coffin with our paperwork. And we will then either put the coffin on a storage area here, or we will move the coffin straight into the crematory to be cremated.
So there is a coffin there now.
There's a coffin there now, and you'll see that there's the ID card next to the to that person's coffin. So that name will match the name on the coffin.
So that was somebody who had a service earlier on today.
Earlier on today, and will be cremated today.
Right.
We have to cremate. It's not a legality, but it's a guidance that we should cremate everybody within 72 hours.
Oh.
As we walk into the crematory, you'll see that there's a window.
Mm-hmm.
And some families will want to see the start of cremation.
Oh, really?
So this is called the viewing window.
Oh, this is it, right, I see.
So if somebody wants to see the coffin going into the cremator, so to witness the start of cremation, they could come. A lot of Hindus and Sikh families do that.
Yeah.
But again, if people have been around and they've seen it and they say, actually, I would like to do that, if we know in advance, we can absolutely make that happen. And we only need to know in advance because we'll have to have a cremator ready.
What, did you have to get it up to temperature or something, do you?
So there's a legal temperature again that we have to have. So I'll just take you through, go through another door. It's all quite close.
Oh, it's noisy in here. What's the noise?
That will be all the machinery.
Ah, there's some cremation going on.
Yes.
So I'm faced with three what look like hatches in a way, stainless steel hatches. So that's three individual crematoria.
So everything's done on an individual basis. So questions that we get asked are, do we cremate the coffin? Is everyone cremated together? How do we know who everybody is? And you can see here that there's three individual cremators, stainless steel doors that when you press the green button there that's lit, if it's okay to do, the door will open. It's very hot when we open that door, and then we roll the coffin straight in.
So what sort of temperature are we talking about?
Over 800 degrees.
Mm. So it has to be heated up for how long?
That will depend if we've had the cremator on the day before or not. And what we want to do is work in a very efficient way, so that we're not wasting heat and gas. So we plan our week
to see how many services we have. And what we want to do is that when one cremation finishes, that we're ready to cremate the next coffin.
So you use it twice?
So we only use two cremators now. We now cremate from 7 in the morning till 6 in the evening. So it's a longer day, which allows us not to waste gas.
Yeah. And then once the coffin goes in, how long before it's ashes?
So after the coffin's gone in, if it was somebody like me, so we'll say an average size, about an hour and a half for the body to be cremated. And you can see that in the stainless steel doors, there's a spy hole, and we've only got one cremator on today. And then you can see the cremation after a certain period, you can see how things are going. And it's a visual check to see how long the cremation's got. Are you all right to look?
Yes. Oh, it just looks like a barbecue, doesn't it? Very, very red and hot.
So to me, it's very red and hot, and the bricks are just a beautiful red colour. So it's just very... To me, it's very sort of a warm,
pretty
colour.
It's not distressing.
It's not distressing, is it?
It's distressing for me to look at. But then, like I say, it looks like coals that are red hot.
Yeah. So, again, the ID card. So we know that the person that's being cremated at the moment, their ID cards just by them outside. When that cremation's finished, we will use, you'll see a long stainless steel... We call them rakes,
yeah,
and we will take the remains down to cool. So they will come to this section here.
So they drop down.
Yeah, for about an hour. At that stage, they're not the ash that you may have seen before. So they'd be the remains that are very brittle, because through the cremation process, the moisture has all gone. And what's left is the skeletal bones, which is very brittle when you touch it. Some families will ask to have the remains back in that condition. So sometimes some Japanese or Chinese people may ask to do that, and they will come back to us with chopsticks and remove the remains into a larger container and take those. Yeah. So again, if people want to do that, there's no problem. Within those remains, often there will be metal implants. So if somebody's had a hip replacement or a knee replacement, they won't cremate. And families have the opportunity to take those with them, or they can say that we can recycle them as part of the National Institute of Cemetery and Crematorium Management's metals recycling scheme. So we've been doing it for 20 years, and nationally over £20 million has been raised for bereavement charities. So before that time, whatever 20 years was ago, 2004, the metals used to be buried on site, which was just a waste for the ground and a waste, seeing that £20 million has been raised for bereavement charities.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
It makes me happy all the time because families are delighted that something's goods coming out of it, and then we're able to give. So this year we gave £5,800 to the Mulberry Centre in Isleworth, which helps people with cancer, and £5,800 to the Louis Body Society, which is a type of dementia. That's great.
So the question everybody asks is, how do I know my person's body is not going to be mixed up with somebody else's ashes? And I can see from here you've only got one room for one coffin in each cremator, and you obviously safely get those ashes and down.
That's it. And then when we go back to the other room, so we would have taken the remains down. I'll just show you what that's a cold cremator. Yeah, that just shows you. So the door would open, and we've got to roll the coffin in very quickly. So we're not being disrespectful when we do that, it's just necessity. And again, that's why we need a coffin.
Yeah, it's just a bit bigger than a coffin size, isn't it? There's a bit of room on either end and either side, a foot, I would say, perhaps.
And people have got bigger, so sometimes they won't fit in these cremators. So
that big?
Yeah.
Really? Well, it's not as scary as I thought, I have to say. You did ask me beforehand what I envisaged, and I think I said I envisaged a sort of huge great tank. I don't know why I thought it was be so big. A bit like an oil drum. With the fire going on all the time, I think is what I thought.
Yeah, the only thing that I think that people have that image from is when they've seen large fires from Puss and Mouth and things like that. It's the only time I can think that people have a reference point, because you don't see it. I think there's one James Bond film, which didn't help matters, but apart from that, but in this room, I know it's a dark day to date, but we have a glass ceiling, so you can see, so when the sun shines through and you can see the planes going over, it's really lovely. A lot of people think it looks more like a hospital or something.
Yes, it's quite clinical.
Clinical, that's the word.
Yeah, and clean. It looks clean and, yes, the kind of place you wouldn't mind your loved one coming to, I have to say. I'm impressed.
We've had a woman came whose husband died and he hadn't wanted her to leave him. So she stayed in here and my dog came in Noodles and sat on her lap for the hour and a half. And she watched the whole process as something that she was really scared of. Mm. You know, by the end of, you know, spending time with our staff and chatting through and being here while, you know, and then seeing the ashes cremulated, and then she took him home. So she never left him for a moment.
Brilliant. So I think that's the kind of thing we'd all like to do more of, and we'd like to know more about.
Yeah. So it is, you know, that's.
It's demystifying it and making it something that you're really part of, which I would appreciate it.
And we've got brilliant staff. They're genuinely very caring and they look after everybody that comes through. So that makes a difference. And you'll see that it's really clean and tidy. But I think that's respectful too.
Well, we're all afraid of what we don't know, aren't we? And that's, I think, why we are. Obviously, a lot of us are very wary of what happens behind the scenes, and I'm so glad you've shown me around, because
she did. She left me the remains so I could show you how they look. So after a cremation's completed, this is how the remains would look.
Right, so that looks like, I can see some bones, white bones, and sort of flaky bits like leaves and things.
Yeah, so that's all just...
That's how it comes out.
And then you have a magnet here, and you would roll that round, and then any of you see it that will pick up any of the metals, and those of the metals then will go into the metal collection here.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see in there that will have been a leg pin or a back pin. This may have been a hip joint and a knee joint there
with the ball on it.
With the ball, and that's all the metals then get recycled, and after that. So those will have been cooled. They would have cooled for an hour. Mm. We'll put them in this machine, which is called a cremulator. It's quite dusty. And we will slide that in here. I'll just show you how it works. I won't do it though. And the doors will close. So we just slide that in, and then there'll be a flail that will go around very quickly. And make those remains into fine ash.
Into ashes. So you do all that on the spot, on the day.
Yeah. And then those ashes will be removed from there, and we will place them. These are our ashes boxes. So some crematoria, I can't stand them, are the ones that look like plastic sweet jars or...
I had one of those from my mother.
Yeah, we used to do them here. Things just sort of change, but I just... You'd buy a bottle of perfume and then it's a nicer box than people get their remains in, and I just don't think it's good enough.
No.
So we design these ourselves. So you have the certificate, so you know the person who's died, and then the ashes are in a bag, and that card that I talked from the beginning is stapled, so you know that's the person. Yes. So that's the whole process is together.
Labelled. And this is a very smart black box with dark grey box with a picture of on the front a dove.
Yeah, our dove's from the front, and then it's ribbon. So a lot of families now if they come back and they bring the ashes back to be scattered, they'll come with the box and we'll say, would you like to keep the box? And many will. They'll either put the orders of service in or photos. Yes. But
that's
it's
a lovely idea.
Yeah. But as I say, I'll show you as well. I've got some here, how we do the ashes for children. So if we do a baby's ashes, what we'll do is we'll have them in a bamboo pouch with a flower on. We'll have a QR reader, which has got the story of the water bugs and dragonfly story on there. And we light a candle on the catafalque, and that remains with the baby until the end and goes with the ashes as well.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, people want something tangible. And we're very conscious, that they should be taking their baby home.
Do you have many baby and small children?
How sad. We do. Again, lots of families will come to us. I think because funeral directors will know how carefully we'll do things. Mm. I'll show you our garden in a moment, but every crematorium should be like that.
Yes, super sensitive.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this place is all the arches. You've got these lovely brickwork arches outside, but they're echoed, aren't they, by the arch windows everywhere.
Yeah, and they've got the stained glass as well, which just gives a bit of colour.
Yes.
So we were desperate to get colour back here. It was very dark and gloomy many years ago. So we've had some great head gardeners. So we've got herbaceous borders everywhere and colours and water features. So a lot of people will come back. We want a crematorium that people will come back to, and they do. And we have a grief cafe once a month, so people come back for that, and we get to know them.
So we're outside now in the garden. This is where people leave the flowers.
Yeah, so people after a service will come out, and if they've had flowers or they've brought flowers, they'll sort of gather round and read the messages that have been left and have a chat. What we do here is that families can donate the flowers, and we take them. We've got a volunteer, Kim, who comes in, and we make them into small vases, so none of it's wasted. And we take them to nursing homes and people in the community. There's one nursing home where we take them. We take them as they are. So like the large purple and white one there that would have been on the coffin.
It's okay.
And they do it as a day event, and they make all their own flower arrangements, and they love it. There's a woman that's used to be a florist, and when she sees the flowers coming in, she claps.
They're not wasted.
They're not wasted, because often people worry about, they say, it's such a waste.
Yes.
And they just absolutely love them. So, yeah.
You mentioned earlier on people come and scatter ashes here. Do you have a special place for scattering
ashes? So wherever you see grass, the ashes can be scattered. Ashes aren't great for gardens in quantity, so it can be quite tricky. So we've had to replace the roses a good few times. So we don't encourage people to scatter them in the rose gardens if possible. So
on the grass is okay, is it?
On the grass is fine.
And you've got a lot of grass. We're now walking around a kind of square lawn, aren't we, outside, with a beautiful weeping willow in the middle.
And this is our sculpture. So this is, we just try to get art into the to the crematorium grounds. So she's called Moonlight. She's by an artist called John Hateley. And she's just beautiful, really.
She's amazing.
And when it rains, it looks like she's crying, because the rain just sits on her cheeks. But she looks hopeful as well, doesn't she? She doesn't look...
Well, she's looking up to the sky, isn't she, for...
Yeah.
And she's crossing her hands at the front. It actually does remind you of remembering.
We love her.
You've got quite extensive grounds, haven't you?
Yeah, but what we've done, which again is different to a lot of crematoria, you won't see many memorials. So it doesn't look like a cemetery. It looks like a garden. Mm. And we've done that purposely so that people can just be at peace here.
When I asked you if you had a lot of children's funerals and you said yes, you're kind of implying that that's because you're used to and good at dealing with children.
Well, we work with the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, so we look after the babies there. But I think child death, baby death, stillbirths are more common than people realise. Mm.
because we don't talk about it.
We don't talk about it. And people that have had a stillbirth or baby loss find it very difficult. Families, you know, parents returning back to work, you know, how do they discuss it or what do people say? People find it really hard.
But it isn't easy, is it? None of us really know. We know we can't comfort someone who's lost a baby. But just acknowledging it is often all people want, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the special baby garden.
Yeah, so this is called the Waterbug and Dragonfly Garden. There was a woman I met whose son, Alex, died. Her husband had died the year before, and then her son died from cancer a year later. And I met her, and she was given the book in Australia at the hospital her son died in, and it was called The Waterbugs and Dragonflies. So the story's about little waterbugs that live in the bottom of the pond.
Right, yes.
And they go up to the lily stalk, and they said, right, the next one that goes up the lily stalk's got to tell us what happened. So the water bug went up the lily stalk, turned into a dragonfly and flew off. And then he was flying around one day and saw his friends, and he said, oh, I'm going to go and tell them, like I promised, what happened. And he tried to do it, but he was bouncing off the water. And he said, they'll just have to wait until they become dragonflies too. That was the basis of the story. And the dragonfly went into the sunshine. So the pond is, well, A, we have water bugs here and dragonflies. Yes. So that's what the pond's there for. But it's also the sunshine. And on the seats round here, the story's carved into the block.
Yeah.
On the seat there, there's the QR code. Oh, and yes. So you can listen to the story being told. So if siblings come, we'll give them a metal card reader with the story on it, and they can go home and listen to it. And then here we've got the memorial trees. So people can have a leaf on the tree to remember their baby or child.
And people have hung. There's a little pink teddy bear there.
So people will come up on anniversaries or due dates.
Well, there's one there, born in April 2017, died in July 2017.
Yeah.
Another one, born sleeping.
So there's lots of different ages.
Yeah.
And lots of people have become friends. Parents have become friends. And we have Christmas service. We have a service at Christmas. We have a service in the chapel, and then we come down here. Last year we wrote names on little boats, and they went into the pond, and we had sparklers and bubbles. And then everyone went back and they brought food and shared food together.
Yeah. Oh, I bet they got a lot of comfort from that.
Yeah. And now what people say, when they go, they know they'll say they're with their other friends. So no, it's a special garden.
It's very impressive. So I would say there's about 50 leaves on this tree, aren't there? And every one is a small child. Yes, very, very poignant, Natasha. You're obviously doing an awful lot to help people.
And I look at a lot of these and I'm thinking, a lot of them we do Grief Awareness Weeks the first week of December, and we do a park run. So we run 5K or walk it together, and a lot of the parents here come and join us.
So you really are kind of like at the heart of a community of people who have lost children, aren't you? And that must be so fabulous for them to know they can meet other parents in the same situation and know there's somewhere they can come and pay their respects, keep coming back to their baby, their child's not forgotten.
No. And even we were listening to the planes earlier, they've been good to us, they haven't come over
at the
moment. But I'll say, when you're flying into Heathrow, many people travel, I'd say you'll see the garden. So even if they're travelling, they can think of their baby or child as they're, you know, coming into Heathrow and they can see
they can
the garden.
Look down, see the garden.
Yeah. And people do the same if they're going over Chiswick Bridge. They'll say, shout hello from there.
Sounds like the motorway in the distance, but we're not near enough. To
no, that's just traffic going over Chiswick Bridge.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. And what you didn't describe was the lilies. The fountain is made out of lily flowers, isn't it?
Yeah, so they're glass. So yeah, it's the water, that's the noise of the water coming through the lilies. And you can see some of the dragonflies.
Oh yes, yes.
The metal dragonflies. Yeah. We get lots of dragonflies in the summer.
Yeah,
yeah, so that's our garden.
So you must now know a lot of these people quite well.
Yeah, I do.
And they come to you for support.
Yeah, some of them are good friends now. That's our gazebo here in the garden. So we've had services here. So it works well if there's a small number of people. Because of the annoying planes,
If there's a large crowd, they can't hear. But we've had some very special services just there with a few people, and the coffin's been placed there.
So you must be full of advice of what to say to people, not anybody who's grieving, but I suppose particularly as we've been talking about babies and children. What kind of things do you say to help the bereaved?
When I first meet them, I don't think I say the right thing at all, because they really don't want to be here. I feel that anything I say must be cutting them like a knife, because you're not wanting to come and look round the crematorium and arrange a funeral.
No.
And it's so much information to take in.
At a point when you're not really taking in
anything
anyway.
Where you're not taking in
anyway.
Information. So I just hope almost the buildings and the grounds do that for me. And that by going around and seeing that they feel that they're in a safe place. Because I don't think the words are there.
No.
But that's my hope, is that when they come, they feel that their baby or child or anybody's person will be looked after and respected. So if somebody became here before a funeral, like you have to say, I would just want them to think, do you know what, that place is well cared for, everyone's respectful, I trust them. And that's, I think, our job. Mm. With regarding helping them, if we don't often know the story because they don't tell us, we give out a card from the Good Grief Trust, which is a bereavement charity that's got over, I think, 1,400 bereavement support groups underneath their umbrella. So if I don't know the story, I'm able to give them that, and then they will be able to signpost them for the help.
Yeah. And then as things go on, and as you get to know them better, and they keep coming back for services and things, I guess, I'm assuming they probably do like to talk about the child they've lost, don't they?
Oh,
they want
yeah.
you to say the name, and they want other people to talk about that child.
Yeah, and I will. And I love if they feel able to show me the photos of their baby and to know the way, if they were able, not everyone is able to hold their baby or anything like that, but if they were, you know, did they look like the mum or dad, or did they have lots of hair, or questions we would ask people if the baby had gone on to live. We ask them, you know, what sex is the baby, or what do they look like, or what colour eyes? You say those things, it's no different. So once I know I'm okay and not intruding, if I'm able to, I love to hear that. But yeah, they have to, I think it's building the trust that they feel it's okay to. The other thing, people think that we've seen it all, or, you know, it's not unique, but it is unique. It's so unique. I don't think anybody's the same that comes in here. They're also different. Every story's different. Every family's different. Every circumstance is different. So if I ever get in that position where I hear some of it, I just feel privileged. I do like it. I'm interested in people. Mm. It's why I don't find it depressing. People think it's depressing, but you're party to hearing about so many different types of people and the history of things. Yeah. I love people. So again, this is another tree, and people can have a leaf on here.
And this is for adults.
And again, we've done trees so that it's not individual plots, but people are part of a whole. Yes. They're all together here.
So a tree with a leaf on it, and the leaf is inscribed with the person's name, and then whatever else their family want to put about them.
So we've got an owl, and we have
A heart,
butterflies. There's a croc somewhere. Somebody's got croc shoes. Cricket.
A toadstool.
All different things. Teacup.
And a grand piano. So this is another little corner where I guess people will come back and sit and remember their loved ones while they look at the tree. Oh, I can see your dovecot now. Yes, that's a nice thing to have, isn't it?
Yeah.
People like to let doves off sometimes, don't they, at funerals? Do you do that?
That's how this happens.
Is it?
So a dove started coming here, and we thought it was part of the White Dove Company that had been here to release some doves.
Oh.
But it wasn't. So one of the visitors that came said that dove can't be by itself. So he brought six more friends for him, and we had to get the dove cot. So that's
story.
How we ended up with them.
Yeah.
So now we've got four at the moment.
I can see why the children would want to come past and say hello in the morning.
So that's what we do. Yeah, they love it. So what we do sometimes as well, if there's a young child and say their parent had died, we say come and feed the doves so that they're not scared of coming to the crematorium. Yeah. So we'll come and they'll meet and they'll feed the doves and they'll, you know, see the gardens. We show them the water machines because they like pressing a button. And so when they come, they show everyone else the dove. So on the day, they're a lot more relaxed or not so concerned.
Well, we've done the tour. Thank you so much. That was really interesting.
So Natasha, thank you so much for showing me around. I'm so glad I came because you have demystified it for me. And I don't know quite what I was expecting. I did describe it before. I do think I kind of thought the coffins did go straight into a sort of furnace affair immediately. But now that I've seen the crematory and the ovens and everything, it all feels very straightforward, and I feel I'm not scared of it at all any longer. So I'm very grateful. Thank you for showing me around.
Oh, thank you so much.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.